Chapter 26. Preparations. In honor of the double betrothal, Effie and Miss Viner were to appear that evening at dinner, and Darrow, on leaving his room, met the little girl springing down the stairs, her white ruffles and coral-colored bows making her look like a daisy with her yellow hair for its center. Sophie Viner was behind her pupil, and as she came into the light, Darrow noticed a change in her appearance and wondered vaguely why she looked suddenly younger, more vivid, more like the little luminous ghost of his Paris memories. Then it occurred to him that it was the first time Essie had appeared at dinner since his arrival at Giver, and the first time, consequently, that he had seen her in evening dress. She was still at the age when the least adornment embellishes. And no doubt the mere uncovering of her young throat and neck had given her back her former brightness. But a second glance showed a more precise reason for his impression. Vaguely though he retained such details, he felt sure she was wearing the dress he had seen her in every evening in Paris. It was a simple enough dress, black, and transparent on the arms and shoulders, and he would probably not have recognized it, if S.E. had not called his attention to it in Paris by confessing that S.E. hadn't any other. He same dress? That proves that she's forgotten, was his first half-ironic thought. But the next moment, with a pang of compunction, he said to himself that S.E. had probably put it on for the same reason as before. Simply because S.E. hadn't any other. He looked at her in silence, and for an instant, above Effie's bobbing head, she gave him back his look in a full bright gaze. "Oh, there's Owen!" Effie cried, and whirled away down the gallery to the door from which her stepbrother was emerging. As Owen bent to catch her, Sophie Viner turned abruptly back to Darrow. "You too?" she said with a quick laugh. "Didn't know," and as Owen came up to them she added, in a tone that might have been meant to reach his ear colon, "I wish you all the luck that we can spare." About the dinner table, which Effie, with Miss Viner's aid, had lavishly garlanded, the little party had an air of somewhat self-conscious festivity. In spite of flowers, champagne and a unanimous attempt at ease, there were frequent lapses in the talk, and moments of nervous groping for new subjects. Miss Painter alone seemed, not only unaffected by the general perturbation, but as tightly sealed up in her unconsciousness of it as a diver in his bell. To Darrow's strained attention, even Owen's gusts of gaiety seemed to betray an inward sense of insecurity. After dinner, however, at the piano, he broke into a mood of extravagant hilarity and flooded the room with the splash and ripple of his music. Darrow, sunk in a sofa corner in the lee of Miss Painter's granite bulk, smoked and listened in silence, his eyes moving from one figure to another. Madame de Chantel, in her armchair near the fire, clasped her little granddaughter to her with the gesture of a drawing-room naiab, and Anna, seated near them, had fallen into one of the attitudes of vivid calm which seemed to Darrow to express her inmost quality. Sophie Viner, after moving uncertainly about the room, had placed herself beyond Mrs. Leith, in a chair near the piano, where she sat with head thrown back, and eyes attached to the musician, in the same rapt fixity of attention with which S.E. had followed the players at the Francaise. The accident of her having fallen into the same attitude, and of her wearing the same dress, gave Darrow, as he watched her, a strange sense of double consciousness. To escape from it, his glance turned back to Anna, but from the point at which he was placed his eyes could not take in the one face without the other, and that renewed the disturbing duality of the impression. Suddenly Owen broke off with a crash of chords and jumped to his feet. "What's the use of this, with such a moon, to say it for us?" Behind the uncurtained window a low golden orb hung like a ripe fruit against the glass. "Yes, let's go out and listen," Anna answered. Owen threw open the window, and with his gesture a fold of the heavy star-sprinkled sky seemed to droop into the room like a drawn-in curtain. The air that entered with it had a frosty edge, and Anna bade Effie run to the hall for wraps. "Darrow said Colin you must have one too," and started toward the door. But Sophie, following her pupil, cried back, "Colin, we'll bring things for everybody." Owen had followed her, and in a moment the three reappeared, and the party went out on the terrace. The deep blue purity of the night was unveiled by mist, and the moonlight rimmed the edges of the trees with a silver blur, and blanched to unnatural whiteness the statues against their walls of shade. Darrow and Anna, with Effie between them, strolled to the farther corner of the terrace. Below them, between the fringes of the park, the lawn sloped dimly to the fields above the river. For a few minutes they stood silently side by side, touched to peace beneath the trembling beauty of the sky. When they turned back, Darrow saw that Owen and Sophie Viner, who had gone down the steps to the garden, were also walking in the direction of the house. As they advanced, Sophie paused in a patch of moonlight, between the sharp shadows of the yews, and Darrow noticed that as he had thrown over her shoulders a long cloak of some light color, which suddenly evoked her image as he had entered the restaurant at his side on the night of their first dinner in Paris. A moment later they were all together again on the terrace, and when they re-entered the drawing room the older ladies were on their way to bed. Effie, emboldened by the privileges of the evening, was for coaxing Owen to round it off with a game of forfeits or some such reckless climax, but Sophie, resuming her professional role, sounded the summons to bed. In her pupil's wake she made a round of good nights, but when she proffered her hand to Anna, the latter, ignoring the gesture, held out both arms. "Good night, dear child," she said impulsively, and drew the girl to her kiss. Book IV, XXIII, the next day was Darrow's last at Giver, and, foreseeing that the afternoon and evening would have to be given to the family, he had asked Anna to devote an early hour to the final consideration of their plans. He was to meet her in the brown sitting room at 10, and they were to walk down to the river and talk over their future in the little pavilion abutting on the wall of the park. It was just a week since his arrival at Giver, and Anna wished, before he left, to return to the place where they had sat on their first afternoon together. Her sensitiveness to the appeal of inanimate things, to the color and texture of whatever wove itself into the substance of her emotion, made her want to hear Darrow's voice, and to feel his eyes on her, in the spot where bliss had first flowed into her heart. That bliss, in the interval, had wound itself into every fold of her being, passing, in the first days, from a high shy tenderness to the rush of a secret surrender. It had gradually widened and deepened, to flow on in redoubled beauty. She thought she now knew exactly how and why she loved Darrow, and she could see her whole sky reflected in the deep and tranquil current of her love. Early the next day, in her sitting room, she was glancing through the letters which it was Effie's morning privilege to carry up to her. Effie meanwhile circled inquisitively about the room, where there was always something new to engage her infant fancy, and Anna, looking up, saw her suddenly arrested before a photograph of Darrow which, the day before, had taken its place on the writing table. Anna held out her arms with a faint blush. "You do like him, don't you, dear?" "Oh, most awfully, dearest," Effie, against her breast, leaned back to assure her with a limpid look. "And so do Granny and Owen, and I do think Sophie does too," she added, after a moment's earnest pondering. "I hope so," Anna laughed. She checked the impulse to continue, "as she talked to you about him, that you're so sure?" She did not know what had made the question spring to her lips, but she was glad as he had closed them before pronouncing it. Nothing could have been more distasteful to her than to clear up such obscurities by turning on them the tiny flame of her daughter's observation. And what, after all, now that Owen's happiness was secured, did it matter if there were certain reserves in Darrow's approval of his marriage? A knock on the door made Anna glance at the clock. "Tea, there's nurse to carry you off." "It's Sophie's knock," the little girl answered, jumping down to open the door, and Miss Viner in fact stood on the threshold. "Come in," Anna said with a smile, instantly remarking how pale she looked. "May Effie go out for a turn with nurse?" the girl asked. "I should like to speak to you a moment." "Of course. This ought to be your holiday, as yesterday was Effie's. Run off, dear, she added, stooping to kiss the little girl. When the door had closed, she turned back to Sophie Viner with a look that sought her confidence. I'm so glad you came, my dear. We've got so many things to talk about, just you and I together. The confused intercourse of the last days had, in fact, left little time for any speech with Sophie, but such as related to her marriage, and the means of overcoming Madame de Chantel's opposition to it. Anna had exacted of Owen that no one, not even Sophie Viner, should be given a hint of her own projects till all contingent questions had been disposed of. As he had felt, from the outset, a secret reluctance to intrude her secure happiness on the doubts and fears of the young pair. From the sofa corner to which as he had dropped back she pointed to Darrow's chair. Oh man, sit by me, dear. I wanted to see you alone. There's so much to say that I hardly know where to begin. She leaned forward, her hands clasped on the arms of the sofa, her eyes bent smilingly on Sophie's. As she did so, she noticed that the girl's unusual pallor was partly due to the slight veil of powder on her face. The discovery was distinctly disagreeable. Anna had never before noticed, on Sophie's part, any recourse to cosmetics, and, much as she wished to think herself exempt from old-fashioned prejudices, she suddenly became aware that she did not like her daughter's governess to have a powdered face. Then she reflected that the girl who sat opposite her was no longer Effie's governess, but her own future daughter-in-law, and she wondered whether Miss Viner had chosen this odd way of celebrating her independence, and whether, as Mrs. Owen Leith, she would present to the world a bedizened countenance. This idea was scarcely less distasteful than the other, and for a moment Anna continued to consider her without speaking. Then, in a flash, the truth came to her. Miss Viner had powdered her face, because Miss Viner had been crying. Anna leaned forward impulsively. Why, dear child, what's the matter? She saw the girl's blood rush up under the white mask, and hastened on, Colin, please don't be afraid to tell me. I do so want you to feel that you can trust me as Owen does. And you know you mustn't mind if, just at first, Madame de Chantel occasionally relapses. She spoke eagerly, persuasively, almost on a note of pleading. As he had, in truth, so many reasons for wanting Sophie to like her. Her love for Owen, her solicitude for Effie, and her own sense of the girl's fine mettle. As he had always felt a romantic and almost humble admiration for those members of her sex who, from force of will or the constraint of circumstances, had plunged into the conflict from which fate had so persistently excluded her. There were even moments when she fancied herself vaguely to blame for her immunity and felt that she ought somehow to have affronted the perils and hardships which refused to come to her. And now, as she sat looking at Sophie Viner, so small, so slight, so visibly defenseless and undone, she still felt, through all the superiority of her worldly advantages and her seeming maturity, the same odd sense of ignorance and inexperience. She could not have said what there was in the girl's manner and expression to give her this feeling, but she was reminded, as she looked at Sophie Viner, of the other girls as he had known in her youth, the girls who seemed possessed of a secret as he had missed. Yes, Sophie Viner had their look, almost the obscurely menacing look of Kitty Mayne. Anna, with an inward smile, brushed aside the image of this forgotten rival. But as he had felt, deep down, a twinge of the old pain, and she was sorry that, even for the flash of a thought, Owen's betrothed should have reminded her of so different a woman. She laid her hand on the girl's. And his grandmother sees how happy Owen is, she'll be quite happy herself. If it's only that, don't be distressed. Just trust to Owen and the future. Sophie Viner, with an almost imperceptible recoil of her whole slight person, had drawn her hand from under the palm and closing it. That's what I wanted to talk to you about, the future. Of course. We've all so many plans to make, and to fit into each other's. Please let's begin with yours. The girl paused a moment, her hands clasped on the arms of her chair, her lids dropped under Anna's gaze. Then she said, "Colin, I should like to make no plans at all. Just yet." "No plans?" "No, I should like to go away. My friends the Farlows would let me go to them." Her voice grew firmer, and she lifted. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.